Signs of the Southland for Monday, January 8th, 2024. It is National Championship Day in the United States. It is also episode 200 of Signs of the Southland, at least per my possibly incorrect count over the years. Gentlemen, welcome to episode 200. Today we have our usuals of Mr. Jake Grant and Mr. Jack Purdy, but also returning guests, Cade Lawson and Ethan Kreger, original hosts of this fine program, and other returning guests, Mr. Joey Weaver, who was the site editor for From the Rumble Seat for many a year. How is everyone doing on Championship Monday? Where do we go from here?
How's the atmosphere in Houston, Joey? Is it electric? Are people talking about the Wolverines?
We've been under a tornado watch all day, so that's been great. I don't know what it is about, like, big sporting events following me around in the world and then having, like, massive weather events that follow it. Like, I was in Atlanta when we had the Super Bowl and an ice storm in the same weekend years ago. So this just keeps happening, and I don't know why. But otherwise, yeah, I would say – I was at Split Zone Duo Live on Saturday night, and strangely seemed like maybe more Washington fans than Michigan fans, which was kind of surprising. But yeah, pretty good showing from both sides, I would say.
Which is surprising considering Alaska Airlines' current troubles.
Right.
I think about this is also an airlines podcast, right?
Yes, this is definitely an airlines podcast. Well, let's get started. Let's make the most of Joey's time with us today, and let's get started. Let's talk about some Georgia Tech football news. I think one of the news items that we didn't cover a couple weeks ago, because we didn't have the numbers in hand, to be fair, were the viewership numbers of the bowl game on TV. I believe that was on ESPN. That was a noonish kickoff. No, it was 6 p.m. kickoff.
6:30, yeah.
6:30 p.m. kickoff in Tampa. It was a 2.35 million person viewing window for that game. I don't remember exactly what else went against it. I don't think it was an NFL weekend.
Nothing important.
Or an NFL day because it was a Friday.
Not a lick.
Yeah.
Maybe some NBA, pretty but good. Nothing that was going to be important. We were past the in-season tournament. So,
I mean, to be fair, the NBA doesn't really get important until like March. So
no, yeah.
So not really any complaints there. Mr. Grant.
I was really proud of the take I had in the moment of this game being, you know, obviously seemed like the boys enjoyed their trip to Tampa, et cetera, et cetera. Versus the Birmingham Bowl, which kind of had some, I guess, meager head-to-head competition, going to Tampa, having a standalone Friday night game, I think did good things outside, intangibly good things outside of, you know, winning a football game on the field going away. You know, when it comes to having eyeballs on the program of, hey, there's this good thing going on, I think that's something that you can't buy good publicity quite like that.
It's one of those things where because the deck is completely clear and people are looking for something to do during the holidays, like this is one of the bowl games that people were probably watching to avoid their families, right? Like, I have to watch this bowl game instead of, you know, go.
We
eat
all must
dinner.
Watch the Pirate Bowl. Yes, the Pirate Bowl.
But it was interesting just from sort of a, you're right, because it was completely cleared out other than for this window. This was sort of the centerpiece of the night. And so you have a lot of people that wouldn't normally be watching Georgia Tech sports or Georgia Tech football in general that get exposed to Georgia Tech. And I think that was a really interesting thing to watch on Twitter. Like a lot of NFL analytics Twitter that was just bored without something to watch on Friday tuned in on ESPN. And yeah, they had some fun things to say about certain schematic decisions and fourth down calls, that all notwithstanding. They all got to watch the program. They got exposure to the program, and it's only a value add, right? I think this goes back to what you've been saying, Jake, historically about athletics being a front door, and this is the most prominent example.
Well, and I think it's a good point comparing it to the Birmingham Bowl, which, of course, the reason you would make that comparison being that we originally it was reported that's where Georgia Tech was going on bowl selection day or whatever we'll call it. That game was only like 17 hours later, but you make the difference. It's, you know, a Friday night. It's, you're leading into a big Christmas weekend, like a long weekend. You figure that might be kind of the last round of holiday parties people are going to or whatever. And getting that in a standalone spot versus, you know, what ends up being Duke in the Birmingham Bowl. And that was, there was at least one other bowl game going on at the time for most of that.
Yeah.
It's now Saturday around lunchtime. People probably trying to get Christmas shopping done, that kind of thing. So it does set up nicely for that Gasparilla Bowl to be, you know, a pretty prime position to get views. And it was nice that Georgia Tech made the most of it and kind of made a good name for themselves with that good showing, a good comeback victory. You had Brent Key's little note in the post-game press conference on the field that was pretty fun and got a little bit of traction. So, I mean, yeah, I don't know if that could have really worked out any better for Georgia Tech within reason, getting that spot and having that result.
So related to that, there were actually people at the Tech basketball game on Saturday, which, oh my gosh, we'll get to that in a minute. We're a Coca-Cola school. It's Powerade t-shirts. They look to be homemade, definitely not available on our fine sponsor's website. But clearly there was an effect that had. And of course, that made the rounds. I saw people that were not affiliated with Georgia Tech LinkedIn posting about that. Like, well, how often do you see random like LinkedIn influencers talking about branding deals involving Georgia Tech? I mean, that's emblematic.
Just, like, it was such a good moment and everyone really made a meal of it too. Like every single media outlet that was involved in broadcasting the game or Georgia Tech itself really, really emphasized that. I mean, not that partnership, but just the fact that it was so, that moment was so quotable.
It was a fun meme. It was the sports meme of the night.
It was a very good
in America.
Meme.
Like it worked out perfectly. We win and we become meme generators, but in a good way. Like that's a rare combo to hit. Usually the memes are not good, especially if you watch the Golden Globes last night. None of those memes that came out of that were good for those people involved. And it
the
worked
fact
out
that
different.
I
Jack, I don't think anybody watches the Golden Globes.
I know, I'm weird, man. I'm weird, man.
I was gonna say, like, I didn't know the Golden Globes were last night, and I didn't know that there were memes that came out of the Golden Globes last night. So that kind of tells you the staying power of that institution specifically.
It's a bad broadcast.
But I'm going to assume that Brent Key's comments are why Tech is ranked 25th in the Sporting News' way too early top 25 for 2024, simply on the power of memery. There's no other explanation possible. I don't have any other insight as to why someone is putting Georgia Tech at 25 at this point in the year, considering that we are only 8 days into it. So there it is. Does anyone, I'll open it up to our full panel of guests here. Does anyone have any, I guess, lingering thoughts that they want to get out about the season now that we are, an hour and a half away from the final game of it?
I mean, I'm just relieved that I don't have to care about this national championship game in a way that's negative for my emotions. I think four of us were all together when UGA and Alabama were playing that first time they played. Maybe we weren't. I don't remember. I've watched enough national championships with y'all that they all run together. But like, just the anxiety of not wanting one of the teams to win versus rooting for a team positively or just wanting to watch good football, I think is vastly different. And not that it's like, I mean, I'm kind of past the point where the results of other teams affect me now that they got their natty. But, you know, if I don't have to be like, ugh, this Clemson, annoying, or like, ugh, Athens, gross, I'm just excited to watch a football game, to be honest.
If my Seahawks had
a good one.
If my Seahawks hat didn't give it away, I'm rooting for Washington tonight because Washington was actually the first school I ever went to since my mom was in grad school and gave presentations with me in her arms and in classes in the latest 90s, 1999. So I claim a tiny bit of Washington and I don't have anything to claim over Michigan. So I'm going that way. Also, I found out today that Wolverines only exist in Washington. So,
I believe it was the Washington Department of State Parks or something like that that tweeted it out this morning.
Yeah.
Good morning to the only state in this, playing whatever it was. Anyway, sorry. Two things I'll get out just on this season with, I guess just the season overall is related to Georgia Tech. Number one, I know there were high points. I know there were low points, but 7-6 with a bowl win for year one for Brent Key. For me, I would say unqualified success. Successful year, mission accomplished. Could it have been better? Yes. Could it have been worse? Absolutely. Like, and I think you met or slightly exceeded expectations making a bowl game in year one and then winning it. So that good, all good things for me and, you know, positive momentum moving into next year. Number one, number two, I think if I look back and I think of what is the single biggest thing that Brent Key did or that has been done in the last year to make that happen, I think was bringing in Haynes King. Like, I don't know that we can understate how big a deal it is having a guy playing quarterback at the level that we saw King play at on a number of occasions throughout the year. Not every game. There were a couple of stinkers out there. But, you know, I think back to a number of moments having him in there. I mean, even like the last few seconds of the Miami game, right? Like, he made a couple of throws and had some poise. Like, that's a big piece of the reason you're able to go down and you know, win at the last second, right? So, like, having a guy playing quarterback at that level is such a huge deal. And I just thought that having him in the building was maybe the biggest thing that Brent Key and his staff did to get to this positive result at the end of the year.
Yeah. I think, Joey, as always, the true voice of the Tech fan, so I appreciate it.
Ty praise.
I think one of the big things, too, is for me that the one thing that I remember telling people right at the tail end of the regime of the last coach was all I ask for from this program is baseline competence. Good, bad, or like better than competent, so be it. If they get there, fine. It's icing on the cake, but just don't make me have to like be embarrassed about the program in public. Right. I think the previous regime did a great job of funneling embarrassment specifically to all of us. And now that regime will be funneling embarrassment specifically in Chapel Hill. So that's a great for them. But
oh, yeah. Should we all collectively laugh together at what happened in Chapel Hill in the last couple of days?
Not to bury the lead, but UNC did hire Jeff Collins as their new defense coordinator after firing Gene Chizik. An interesting hire, to say the least. I wish them luck in that endeavor because
Do we wish them luck?
I mean, I wish them luck like in a kind of like a conceptual level because for that to work, they'll need it. It's not going to work. I don't know why they're trying. This is like a stoppable force, movable object situation. I don't know, but to the point I was making, I think that's another thing that Brent Key brought this season, right? At least he's established the floor of competence and where he goes from there. We'll find out, but he's established that floor of saying, hey, Georgia Tech is back to not not being a constant embarrassment that I have to explain away to my friends.
Right.
Making like 8 to 9 bowl games a decade, I think, is like baseline expectation for this program. I understand the ceiling might not be quite what other places have, but like you can still make bowl games basically year in and year out here. As you saw, they made bowl games like 27 years in a row,
right?
Up until the debacle of 2015, I think it was.
And that's the thing too, is no one's really talked about this yet. Clemson is not a permanent part of the schedule anymore. After this year, right? Like that's something that we haven't, I mean, obviously rivals, interest, that's all good stuff, but Clemson was a giant stumbling block. And I'd say, you know, that probably makes the schedule on the whole a little bit easier. Yes. Sometimes you're slotting in FSU, a competent Louisville, seemingly NC State type program, but you're also getting Cal or Stanford in there. And I know I'm about to eat massive crow if either of those go south, but, you know, spooky Clemson.
Well, they're off the schedule. They're not playing us. We don't play them next year at all. Like that's donezo.
All I say is I think Joey, I generally agree with what you're saying. 8-9 years out of 10. Like that's, You can't say 10 out of 10. That's unrealistic for just about anywhere. But baseline competence is 8, 9, 10, you know, out of 11.
10 would be incredible. Whatever 10 would be incredible.
But, yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say, and this is Kate, if you don't recognize my voice, since I was laid off as podcast host those many years, the budget cuts. But yeah, Akshay, you got to raise your bar. You got to raise your bar.
I have to raise my bar beyond I don't want to be embarrassed?
Yes, you absolutely should. You're talking
having
about
expectations is having hope, and having expectations is rat poison, as I've been told.
Preseason top 25 team right now, which I don't think is as crazy as you do, just because it's so random whether or not you're team number 25 or not. But come on, join me in the upper tier of optimistic Georgia Tech fans who think that you can do better than 6-6.
Saying absolute floor, by the way. Like,
yeah.
Absolute baseline expectation, you know, is there. I think, yeah, you should expect more than that in a, you know, good handful or most years even.
And that's the thing too, is if you flip some of those truly egregious losses of the previous regime, you're not that far from 6-6. Like,
at that point, you're within the span of ACC randomness to get to 6 wins at that point.
But they could never win the random games because you're not effectively
right. You have to be a competent
program, and that's the difference.
Coaching, quarterback, etc.
And we've talked about that 6 ways to Sunday on this podcast. So all I will say is
Saturday.
Congrats, UNC. Good luck with that. The bad man is gone. You know, like that's that.
Yeah, I'll just add on, this is Ethan, because I know I, like Kate, also was laid off many moons ago. I will add that I would love to see Jeff Sims in Chapel Hill next year, just for the sole reason.
Oh, my God.
I mean, they're getting the band back together. And that
Groovy Davey P, too, you know? Just get everyone.
Pat Note is in Buffalo. That news came down the wire a couple days ago. So that dream is dead, but Jeff Sims and Jeff Collins can be back together once again, for sure.
Crazy. I still find it so funny that the painting that's across from the entrance to the Kolk building, Clough building, the football player is very much Jeff Sims on that mural. Like, it is very clear that it's Jeff, and he is the only football player muralized on campus right now.
So we're number 10, right?
Yeah. I don't know if there's a number on it.
That could be Haynes King. How do you know? Like,
It's not
Haynes King.
It's not Haynes King. To the point of what Jeff Collins is doing for UNC, Georgia Tech has a similar opening for at defensive coordinator. I want to take it to you, Joey, as you're the most knowledgeable in the college football ecosystem out of all of us. Who would be your pie in the sky pick for defense coordinator, and who do you think would be a realistic option?
High in the sky. I mean, one of the first places my mind goes is maybe like a Zach Arnett, you know, who I guess was thought well enough at Mississippi State to take over as head coach. But obviously there was also a lot of context there in the wake of Mike Leach passing away, unfortunately. I'm struggling to come up with names of anyone that really sticks out that like makes sense to me. I don't know why it is. And I have struggled with this. I mean, I don't know. I guess Zach Arnett maybe would be the first place that my mind goes, but it's like, you know, my first instinct would be, let's go look and see what defenses this year were kind of at the top end of college football in terms of yards per play. And for context, there are 133 teams in college football, in the FBS, at least, Georgia Tech tied with Georgia State for 1/17th in yards per play on defense this year.
Oh,
so
boy,
that's not great. But when I start looking at, you know, who are the programs that were at the top, Iowa, Penn State, Ohio State, Michigan, Notre Dame, SMU, Nebraska, UCLA, Clemson, Troy, Georgia, like you got to go down a while before you get somewhere that's like, oh yeah, like I feel like Georgia Tech could probably money whip their coordinator out, you know, go get them. Or are you thinking of somebody who's otherwise unemployed? Again, like a Zach Arnett, or who was the – oh, it was a DJ Durkin was at A&M, formerly at Ole Miss. And, yeah, I mean, that's a whole other ball of wax of problems that, you know, I don't know that it's the juice worth the squeeze. Oh, Matt House, who was just fired at LSU, who has kind of been up and down over the years, having some good and some bad defenses. So I don't know what the answer is. I am curious to see what Brent does. I do think that at the very least, with the hire of Buster Faulkner and what we saw there and how that offense built this year, I think he's earned the benefit of the doubt in terms of, you know, do we expect that this is going to work out well or not? But I'm kind of lost right now for what I would do or who I would be really targeting trying to go get.
Joey, I am curious to get your thoughts on Tyler Santucci, who's been mentioned a little bit as well. He was at Duke last year. He's the defensive coordinator at Duke last year.
I've heard his name come up. The one thing that's interesting to me that people pointed out is, yeah, he was Elko's defensive coordinator, and Elko very well regarded as a defensive mind. The one thing was that Elko didn't take him with him to A&M, and the question is why? And, you know, we could speculate here, but that's kind of the one thing that would stick out to me is like, well, if he's that good, you know, why not? I don't know. And so, I wish I had something better for you here, unfortunately, but it's been something that nothing has really stuck out here of like, yeah, this would make sense, or I think that's a gettable name that I would really love to see hired. You know, one of the folks, I guess, I don't know, I look at like James Madison had like a top 20 defense roughly. Yeah. But then again, you're often playing, I think, with kind of a talent advantage there. So like,
yep.
I would want to think it spots maybe like more like Troy, something like that. Maybe, I don't know.
Well, James Madison was up to FBS this year. So they were, I don't know if they were playing entirely with a talent advantage, right? Well, the thing is that roster ended up looking like a normal FBS roster by the time they were done in FCS. So
yeah, and I think that could be a case of, hey, their top line starter type, even working from a scholarship disadvantage at FCS, maybe translates decently to, you know, match up with an FBS team. But we did see them falter down the stretch. But then again, yeah, that just kind of comes with the turf, I suppose, with moving up. But the one name that came to mind for me is, I wonder what kind of draft assets we can offer to go grab Bill Belichick.
He's coming to some Atlanta team, I'm hearing. We just don't know which one.
You know, I will offer my first round draft pick. It's not worth much. If I called up the NFL and drafted somebody, they'd say, who are you? Please leave us alone.
We might need to get
get this number?
Yes.
We might need to get some of Cade's Georgia State draft picks as well to send us collateral. Just get a whole Atlanta package just to get him.
Yes.
Send the Hawks. Wait, I would offer the Hawks draft picks, but I think they traded a bunch of those away for DeJounte.
Yeah, we don't got those anymore.
Yeah, I think they're a fresh out. You can't offer Ethan's poor Carolina Panthers first rounder either, because that one's not with them.
That's gone. Woo! Do the Braves have some Rule Fivers out there? Do we got some international slots we can send?
We can give them one Max Fried. I'm sure he can play quarterback.
Okay.
I mean, better than Mac Jones and Bailey Zappi, potentially.
Yeah. I would not be shocked.
I'm really honestly shocked that 3 weeks after the football season ended, we had this much football content to talk about.
Football
but
never dies,
I guess that's
man.
The way it goes.
Football never dies.
The calendar never ends. Watch the football. Watch all of it. That being said, that's about all we have to say on the football team. Why don't we switch gears and talk about men's basketball? Yet another program that's going through some uneasy times here as it moves through the start of the ACC slate. This past week, it lost at home versus Boston College 95-87. Based on my notes here, I feel like this is where I just hand it over to Jake and just let him talk and rant for about 15 minutes.
The ref show, it was a very quick and sudden ref show. That, like,
but see,
was
that's
it,
the thing. That's
it
the
was
thing.
So
the
sudden.
The first 35 minutes of the game, I would not say that it was particularly poorly called.
No, I don't think it was. No, it was fine. None of us really noticed it. It was just a bunch of stuff going, just a normal basketball game. And then all of a sudden there was a technical, a flagrant off review, and then more foul. At one point they had like four free throws in a row, and I couldn't explain how they had them all in the first place. It just stacked so, so quickly.
See, that's the thing. I regulate myself at sporting events to say particular things. There is almost no excuse where you should just be like yelling at the refs. And I was more exasperated than anything, just kind of despondent. Yeah. And that's such a weird feeling because I think in hindsight, in the moment, I was, what's going on? This is ridiculous. But they never should have been in that place in the first place to make that matter if you're going to hold the 13-point halftime lead. I know that's maybe overcorrecting into cope, but at the same time, Georgia Tech went on an 11-point run to go into half based off of three-point shots in particular.
Really good.
Kawasi Reeves looked good from the corner. He was very good from the corner to end the half. But the three has not been there consistently for Georgia Tech throughout the year. And that 13-point lead was not necessarily a Georgia Tech, you know, smothered them the whole half and then, you know, slowly built up a 13-point lead. It was almost a flash in the pan. And that's where I think this game, like, yes, very frustrating to lose a winnable game. Yes, very frustrating for it to seemingly due to, you know, questionable or not. I don't know. At this point, I don't know. I don't really care.
How we got to that point, like, we were up and Boston College, basically, we had a classic third quarter nap, like a just full-fledged nap in the first half of the second half. And they had, we had our 11-0 run, then they came back with a 13-2 run. And by the time we got to that point, we had just finally gotten some points to, like, put some momentum, like, to just stop Boston College from momentum, have a little bit of stuff, and took a lead on a really good Tyshawn Claude dunk. Boston College scored five straight, and then there was a foul called that Boston College, and they said in the presser, they swore was a flagrant. And then the review showed that Miles Kelly did get a flagrant foul. They changed the call. Boston College gets their free throws in the ball and all that kind of stuff. And then what was the other call? That there was a drive. Jake might be able to remember better, but there was a drive that was called on Boston College's end, but they got the fouls, and then Miles Kelly did the exact same thing on the other end, and there was no call whatsoever, and we all just lost it right there and then. We all just lost it. Damon, of all people, Damon Stoudemire, the coolest head we've seen on Texas campus in ages, got a technical foul.
Yeah, I think the breakdown is two clean steals resulted in fouls going against Tech. An egregiously missed out of bounds call. That one was the one where I take the most issue. Miles would have been shooting two. It was flipped to be a flagrant. I think Boston College then through this sequence wound up at the line eight times plus two possessions.
Yeah.
And that's the game right there. It wound up being an 8-point game. Well, it was 10 for a minute, but that was from Boston College heaving a shot way down to the end and putting two more points on the board with 4 seconds left.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, that's interesting too, but that's sports. It do be that way sometimes. But yeah, I don't know. I'm kind of past the point of like this. It's almost too weird to analyze. I don't know. Maybe I'm oversimplifying. No, maybe I'm trying to cope.
Well, but after the game, Damon A was very calm at the press conference. He looked like he always does at the pressers, which is comes in, he's got his backpack, puts his backpack down. He's just kind of just goes into his thing. It's very different from Josh. Very, very different from Josh. But at that point, it just seemed like he's like when you're in the middle of trying to build something, you just run into weird games like this, and that was just the day where the weird game showed up. This was his thing. Like he was an NBA guy. He played for the Blazers. Like he has seen way more basketball than most people in that room combined. So he is as experienced and as expert as anyone to talk about stuff like that. And he was like, yeah, it's going to happen. It's not great. The players were like, we could have avoided this whole thing if we just played better, basically. it was their vibe. So, I mean, they took ownership of it. They weren't out there casting blame or anything like that on other folks. So,
for years, I defaulted to Ethan's opinions when it comes to basketball. I'm curious if you have anything to say on the matter, Ethan.
Yeah, I will admittedly say that of the ACC games so far, I have not watched any entire game. I watched maybe a half to three quarters of Saturday's game. And obviously, the shooting was outstanding. I know it's been a little bit of a struggle at some points this year for Tech to shoot the ball well. And a couple of big misses out of the transfer portal probably hurt a little bit too. I think they were expecting to get more out of Amari Abram And it seems like they were expecting to get more out of Gapare, although given his lack of production at his last stop, I'm a little surprised.
He played a lot in this game, too. Like, he was all over that
he's
game.
He's had a game or two this year where he showed some flashes, but not the kind of guy or not the kind of statistics that would lead you to believe he can be a consistent player in the ACC.
Right.
So I think the biggest thing here is just continuing to have the freshmen develop, and especially the guys who will be returning next year, have a good core back next year, get a couple guys out of the portal and see if they can maybe make a run at the bubble or at least have a better season.
Right. I think it's important to note this is definitely not the year for this team. Like, the flash in the pants are going to be great when we get them. At least we were competitive in this game. Like, there's absolutely a world where we just get just smoked in this game if we don't shoot and it's a 30-point game in the second half or whatever.
And that's the thing, too. Georgia Tech shot 68.4% from the field.
Yeah, they were
good.
They were sinking buckets.
From free throws. They were
54.2%. Yeah, that was terrible.
But, 68.4. That's bad from the free throw line. Not great. I'd like to see that come up. But 54% from field goal range and 43.5% from three-point range, that's not a poor performance by any means. And it's tough to lose games when you're that effective in terms of live ball play. And even then, we talked about, you know, technical flagrant fouls, things like that. In terms of pure fouls, it wasn't like they were, you know, egregiously doing the fouling, if that makes sense. Fairly clean. 11 turnovers, a little high. Don't love that. But I mean, Georgia Tech scored 87 points. You're going to have a shot in most games in which you score 87 points.
We had 51 and a half. It was nuts.
But then again, they did yield a 55% field goal percentage going the other way, 52 from three. That's tough. And Damon said it before the season, this team wasn't as far along defensively as they were offensively. So,
right. Yeah.
I think they're still there. Briefly, that I think that this is not the pushover Boston College team that we've come to expect in recent years in the ACC. This is a better group. Earl Grant is a much better coach than some of the guys they've had recently, especially Quentin Post is a very good big man.
Quentin was cool to watch.
So, I think not the kind of game you want to lose at home, but I do think that Boston College will probably be middle of the pack in the ACC this year and not at the bottom like usual.
Well, even this year, they're already 74 in net, which, you know, we can debate the various attributes of the net ranking until kingdom come. But, 74 means that if they play a certain way, they're a bubble type team. So, they've got their work cut out for them. But it's not like losing to,
Notre Dame.
Of note, this was our last game at home was, I think, the Mississippi State game before this one. That was the longest stretch within a season. We had not played a home game since 1985, 1986. It was like a 30-day break. They apparently had a 41-day gap during that season. So I assume the return to home, I think, was very nice for them and helped just the good vibes of the team and having that feeling of like, hey, we're at home. We're with our people. It was nice for them.
Next up for men's basketball, they will actually play that aforementioned Notre Dame team on Tuesday. I guess that'll be today when you listen to this. That's a 9 p.m. tip on ACC Network that, for whatever reason, why is this at 9 p.m.? Like, come on.
Some years it makes sense if it's like on Reignite or something like that, where like it's clearly a night where the students don't have to be in class the next morning, and they've done that they did that kind of decently during Josh's era, but yeah, this one makes no sense. That's the second day of class for the semester.
They did this before when we were in school, and it was just like, I don't want to go to McCamish at 9 p.m.
Right.
But even if you're not a student, it's a lot to ask for somebody in Atlanta to brave traffic or take the train in for a 9 p.m. game. You're getting home after midnight. Yeah. Like it's all TV. That's what it is. It's TV.
Is there a game before this on ACC Network? Now I have to figure this out.
It is, but the answer is yes.
Always.
Anyways,
ACC Network, this the bane of my existence sometimes. Then at the weekend, Tech will head up to Durham to play Duke. That will also be on ACC Network at 5 p.m. If you remember, Tech opened conference play with a win over Duke at home. So let's see how the return leg of that fixture works out. Let's switch over to women's basketball, who put together a nice little week. A win versus UVA by 3 points and a win at Pitt by 10. An ugly game versus Pitt is, or versus UVA, excuse me, I think is the way that you described it, Jack. Not a lot working offensively, especially like this game getting close late on, but Tech survived, right? Tech got found their way through it and pulled away late.
Yeah, it was tight the whole way for the most part. We were at 1 point gap after one quarter. We were up three at half. It was tied after the third, and we just barely won in the fourth by 3 points. I think we shot 64% from the line, and the only reason we won is because we made three very critical free throws at the end. We didn't score a bucket for like the final 3 minutes of this game in open play. It was all free throws. Same for UVA too. Like, it was the whole thing by the end was just foul free throws. It was, as Jake put it, a lot of running intermixed with free throw shooting for the most part. Oh, do you want to say it? Sorry.
I was gonna say my take, but you know, that's okay.
I mean,
it was a long game. I think, like, start to finish, and I should just look this up on Ramblin' Wreck because it'd be in the box score. But I swear this game was like 2.5 hours long. It was long for a basketball game.
It was 2 hours flat.
Really?
Yeah.
It felt a lot longer than that.
It was quick in the front half. The front half was pretty quick. It was pretty normal. Like, the first half wasn't egregiously foul heavy.
Anyways.
Kara Dunn scored 24 points. Tony Morgan was one assist away from a triple-double.
Kyle Sturdivant.
Oh, sorry. No, I'm thinking of Kyle. Never mind. I lied. I was thinking of Kyle. In the next game, she was close to a triple-double. Not this one. But she had 18 points. And she had been a problem spot at the free throw line. She was 66%, but she drained 10 of them in the game, which was critical. That's at least went 10 of 15. She had she drew 11 fouls in the game.
Whew.
Yeah. And Virginia had a couple of folks that were on serious, serious foul trouble. Inez Naguero was back in the lineup after after missing one game with an injury. She has a wrap on her left elbow, and like, clearly she's in pain while playing, but Nell Fortner was like, yeah, she's going to play no matter what. She's the glue guy on the team. And she was not hesitant to play in this game. So that was good to see. And made a bucket. She hadn't made a bucket in a while. It was a weird Kayla Blackshear game, only 2 and 9. Usually more production there, but just not too much there. She got in foul trouble also, so she had limited court time. Aisha Won Arena only played 6.5 minutes. So that was a different vibe for her. This Pitt game, though, I sadly missed it because I made a poor decision to watch the Falcons on Sunday afternoon instead of this game where we absolutely roasted Pitt on the road. Like, we killed them. Russ came back, did some good stuff. Kara Dunn scored 26. She's now got 6 games with 20-plus points, which is weird to say for a Georgia Tech women's basketball player to have that many points that frequently. That's just not normal for us. And yet here we are with a regular scorer who was putting up really good numbers. And Russ, I guess, not to put up 14. So, Jake, I know you had something on this, right?
Yeah, I was just going to say it was a solid game. Felt good to have a solid game against a Power 5 team. Feels like that's kind of been a little bit rare this year. Don't have much more to add than that. It was a solid win.
Yeah. Blackshear again only made 2 buckets. Tony went 5-11. She was so this game, Tony was 2 assists away from a triple double. She had 12 rebounds and 15 points and 8 assists. So that was good to see. And more of the bench showed up in this game. Eric Turpmus got a couple and a half minutes. Sydney Johnson played 7 minutes. Aisha came back and played 17 minutes. There's a difference there. If they don't need as much rebounding, they can let Aisha play some and kind of just be more of a guard at the 5 spot. But otherwise, she's not a great asset on the rebounding side of things that you would think our tall person would be. Deja Thomas Harris is getting in games here and there. 10-point win on the road is nice. Of note, Pitt, though, was 6-10. They haven't won an ACC game all year. So this was definitely one they probably should have won just in general. And we're sitting about middle of the pack in the ACC right now, early on.
I would say in terms of net, Tech's at 10th in the conference. They catch Clemson coming up on Thursday. That Clemson team is 94th. They're towards the bottom, but they also get Duke as well. They're also at Duke. Interestingly, this Sunday, Duke is currently 28th in the country there. So that would be quite the opportunity to get a good win. Clemson got to win that game. So,
yep.
Not a lot of gimmies in this conference slate. Pitt's about as close to one as that gets. You got to take care of business against Clemson.
These are the ones we have to win before we have to play Florida State and Virginia Tech and Notre Dame back to back to back. So
makes sense. Makes sense. So let's shuggle on over to volleyball. One update from the volleyball team during the big starting of their off season. A new setter has come in from UT Rio Grande Valley, UT RGV. I'm never quite sure I pronounced that. Luana Emiliano from Belo Horizonte in Brazil. The Brazilian pipeline players remains strong at Georgia Tech. A couple of stats here from the release. Emiliano was UT RGV's program leader in assists and a total assist and assists in a season, was at 10.3 assists per set last year, which was right around 11th in the nation. And she was right around where D'Amico and Suarez were last year as well. She was the WAC setter of the year in 2022, notably had 3.2 digs per set, which was fourth most amongst returning setters in the NCAA. One notable bit for her, she played under current Tech assistant Vinny Baigan when he was there at Rio Grande Valley. So overall synopsis, Jack, what is your analysis on this?
A trustworthy face, I think, is the point here. And also is the first person from the Vinny Baigan pipeline that we're getting it from here. And I think it's a comfortable spot to put it because we know Suarez can do the job pretty well. She came in at very necessary times throughout the season, but also between her and Darren Suker, they're both freshmen, were the only other setters that showed up, and so we're left with very young setters in the meantime. So having that experienced leader who also, I mean, she's from Brazil, like she knows how to, she's going to be way more accommodating to our style of play, which is has a much higher Brazilian flavor considering we have like three Brazilian coaches and half the team is Brazilian now at this point. So she's going to fit in way more than probably some other setters would have been that are at the same talent level, perhaps. So it's fun. It helps the depth chart there. We got four setters now between Suarez, Emiliano, Darren Suker, as I mentioned, and Ashlyn Goolsby has been the other one, but she hasn't really seen any time at all. So it'll be interesting to see how it translates, because if you look at the stat leaderboards just for individual stuff, a lot of those, or even in team-wide stats, like you'll see a lot of teams like Lipscomb and just group of five, just team schools you don't usually run into. If you're anywhere good in those leagues, your stats are going to get inflated because it's a lot easier to perform at with higher numbers over there. So while I trust that she is actually quite good, and I heavily trust Michelle Collier and her staff to identify talent and have done and have for a while, I do wonder how her numbers will translate in an ACC context when we're going to have anywhere from 3 to 4 top 10 teams in the conference next year.
I imagine there's a level of metric comparison that you can do here just to determine the quality or the relative quality of the WAC versus the ACC. But I do agree that you do have those problems at those low major and mid major conferences,
yeah,
where there's just not as many teams that are as good. Right. It's not necessarily that all of the teams are subpar. It's just that, like,
if you have one outstanding player, they can do a lot of damage over there compared to.
There's just not as much parity as there is in, say, the ACC or the Big Ten,
yeah,
or the SEC for that matter, where you're putting 5, 6, 7 teams in the tournament every year. So yeah, it'll be interesting. I think being at the top of those leaderboards, just even on a raw metric scale, I think is a good start. But yeah, the translation layer, I think, is where yeah, kind of
usually a program leader in a major statistical category is usually a good sign.
I do find it interesting that they have Suarez on the roster and brought in Emiliano. I think it's the way that you have the depth chart set up, at least on our notes here, is Suarez and Emiliano basically rotating in and out, similar to what D'Amico and Suarez did as the season progressed this past year.
Yeah.
And then,
I'm just going to make the quick comment. Depth is depth. If you're going to get a good player, you're a good player. The depth chart will work itself out.
You can never have enough quarterbacks.
you can definitely have enough. You can definitely have too many quarterbacks if they're all bad.
Okay, well,
the Falcons know that feeling well. Anyway, my point is, I think it's interesting at least to look at the rotations or the projected rotations here, because I think a lot of the way that rotation with D'Amico and Suarez set up last year is based on the middle that was coming in with them. Right, you had Mannion coming in with Suarez a lot of that early part of the year, and then Mannion came in with D'Amico as the second unit or the alternate unit for the back half of the year when D'Amico slipped to the second center spot. So, who that other player is going to be in that middle spot, I think is still up for debate. But at least it seems like you're going to see unit one that starting five with still DeAndre Pierce and probably Eloise Suarez starting at the center, and then Emiliano and whoever else, middle or a existing other middle that's on the roster right now that comes in, maybe establishes themselves in the fall in that second spot, that second rotation as well. So interesting.
Hopefully we'll see her in spring, because they usually play some spring exhibition matches. So she might be, I don't know if she's coming in if she's like on campus now, or if this is a fall or summer situation. But if she's here, like we saw with Pierce last year, where she came in the spring and was there for the practice matches, that'd be fun. The only other name I can think of is Logan Wiley, who we've brought up a couple times, who's a middle blocker coming from Alpharetta, and she was on the first team All-America middle blocking set from Volleyball Mag, like nationwide level. So, and taller than DeAndre Pierce, which is notable, at least for the middle blocking position. So,
So do you know Wiley, you said, was on campus, right?
She's fall. She's standard spring graduate from a Georgia high school.
Makes sense. I think the last hole that we are looking at for this team is that libero spot. Yes.
Yes. That's the main thing. Someone responded on my Twitter post about that she can kind of do some libero stuff too. And her defensive stats are good. Like, she can dig really well. I mean, her mentioned here, she was fourth most digs per set of any setters that are coming back in the NCAA this year. And defense is the thing about this team. The offense is great, of course, but that is the thing. So,
yeah, I was going to say that's the most obvious need, position independent, is just the defense. And also, I after this past year, just having competent, confident middle blocking depth is something that I have learned to value a lot. So hopefully that is something we see coming up, but we've already talked about some of that as well. I think this is one of those things we kind of just have to let play out. It's January. A long way till the season, right?
Hey, we gotta make volleyball a year-round sport. We're working on it.
Rampant speculation. It's transfer season. The transfer window's open, baby.
Speaking of year-round sports, we're going to have to start planning out our baseball and softball previews coming up. But in the meantime, if you want to get ready for baseball or softball season, go on over to Section 103.
Georgia, oh, my Texas. God, he's throwing a hat trick on us.
He did it.
Finest did it. Provider. By now, the Steven interview is out. I listened to it when I was traveling recently. It was delightful. It was great having Steven on. We always are appreciative of his contributions to this fine podcast and this fine site. Like I said, if you want to get ready for Georgia Tech baseball, softball season, the Script Jackets t-shirt, three-quarter length sleeves as well, with the navy and the white. Go check them out, section103.com. You can, as always, get free shipping on orders over $70 each day. Stay tuned here for more spring sports type previews. And with that, back to the show.
Well, in segment two, I think it's appropriate that we take a look back across 200 episodes, probably like 400 something hours of audio, if I added it all up together, of this podcast, and we reconnect with our two original hosts and do honestly what I can only describe as an incredibly self-indulgent history of the show in general. Jake, where do you want to start with this? I think it's kind of appropriate, or it's only appropriate, that we start with that summer. Was that 20 Is that summer of 18?
That was the day France won the World Cup, which I know because I went to downtown Metz. I was at GTL and I walked back from all the French people and Georgia Tech students jumping in the river and whatnot. I did not. I love swimming. I love the water, but can't do just random getting wet. I walked back to my dorm because the four of us had plans to do a test episode of a podcast. I got a pizza from the random pizza joint down the street and ate boxed pizza, having, you know, enjoyed the post World Cup champagne. The rest was history. I don't think that ever got released.
Test episode?
Yeah, I think that was just a test episode. I don't think it's in the feed.
It probably, yeah. Okay. Well, now I have to go do the research and check. But it was, wow, that was like, what, six years ago.
Coming up on six.
Math is hard. And so we did that test episode while you were in France. I was in San Francisco. And I think, did we have the other two guys at that point? Or did we do it with all four? Or did we do it with just us two?
It was the four of us. I'm about 99.9% sure. I think I remember doing it from up here in North Carolina where I was that summer. I think I'm pretty sure Cade was on there too.
Okay, now I need to go back and see if we actually did publish the episode. But
I know we did a couple tests because I remember having to like break down. We did a specifically football offensive preview and a specifically football defensive preview, which is more detail than I think we've given to a preview ever since. So good job, us.
Yeah, no. I remember this because we really dug deep. I think each of those was like an hour of audio while we were figuring out how we wanted to do the format, what we wanted to talk about. And I'm still stalling as I click through. And we had 40 minutes of audio on half of the schedule and half of the, like the offense, the football offense, and another 50 minutes of audio just on the defense. And I think part of the schedule as well. It was insane. It was a lot. It was a lot of audio. And I think back then, our original goal was, yeah, we want to do like 30, 40 minute episodes, keep them bite-sized, keep them manageable, keep them tight. And then I think like 10 or 15 of these in, we just were like, yeah, we're going like 70, 80 minutes by nature. And we were cutting them up. But I think we did those episodes of the summer, right at the tail end of the summer, heading into the football season. And then we got one game in, which is when our metrics really took off. After that first game, something about the anchor at that point, like a Spotify podcast algorithm, really got us cooking. And we had 10 or like about 1,100 listens just on Spotify alone, which was great. I think we were all really happy about that. And then
we've never come close to that since.
Yeah.
Not even close.
Yeah. How does it feel to have been on the highest listened to podcast episode still of the show?
I think all four of us have hung a banner in our own specific, or our own special way.
That has to have been the episode where we were choosing between Cal and UCLA based on quality of look it up. There's some great members of our generation came through those schools. Okay?
Oh, my God.
Well, didn't like Erdogan's daughter go to one of them or something like that? I feel like I remember like some dictator somewhere. Oh, my God.
Which is why we cut that entire portion of what went live on Anchor.
Oops.
This is an anti-Erdogan podcast to this day. Always has been.
So this is official podcast take.
Because what we wanted to do is we wanted to do the Georgia Tech specific stuff, but then also we also still like the rest of the wide world of college football and we were interested in that. And so we picked like a handful of games every week instead of just doing the sicko ones where we just went very quickly and the ACC ones where we tried to give takes, I think we were at least tried to be nuanced, but also occasionally did a bit like this that was went so awry that I don't think that we ever did it ever again. It was an executive decision never to do it again.
I think we each did one pick each during that season.
Yeah.
But yeah. I think after that first week, we changed the segment up a little bit.
Yeah, and we were like, we can't.
I just remember you giving us all COVID, too. Or not COVID, whatever, like pre-COVID light.
Pre-COVID?
No. So that was 2018. We went on a rec club road trip to Tampa. And for reasons that I probably would not do this after COVID, but at the time it was completely justified in my head, I was sick and I still got on the bus to go to Tampa and hang out with these guys. And we were all in the same hotel room. We go to the game. Tech gives up two kick return touchdowns. We end up being nearly kicked out of our section as a group because of some USF fans screaming that we were standing and they couldn't see the game at the time. And that's how you ended up with 2 hours of audio later that day that ended up being the two-part episode, You Stand When They Stand, where I had to cut it in half and then clean up the halves in order for it to be actual usable audio content, because we just rambled for 2 hours. And at one point, there's a clip in there of Jake just banging his head against the bathroom door of just really stupid.
I don't even remember that.
He was so furious and so exhausted from how poorly that game went and how terribly Tech's kickoff return coverage was that he just started banging his head against the door. And I really hope that it made its way on the audio.
Something I reflect on a lot, like probably one of the more Georgia Tech football things I reflect on a lot is, Ethan, I remember you and I walking out of that game. I remember this conversation specifically, kind of being like, Paul's got to go. He's washed. We're toast. And then I think about what we got like after that, and it really like kind of eats at me. I'm like, I didn't know how good I had it. You know, Paul was not washed.
I'm not sure if it's that we didn't know how good we had it or we didn't know how bad it could be, because we found out the true depths of how bad it could be. But I do remember having that conversation as well, and then going back and recording a podcast with 4 slightly sick and slightly delirious people in one hotel room at a
one of the worst like outdoor sports environments I've ever been in, because it was mid-September in Tampa, Florida. It was 90 degrees before you got to the humidity, and also before you got to the inside the stadium part, which we had to walk to like a mile from our hotel. It was so rough.
As the planner of that trip, I would like to say you're welcome to everyone involved, and special shout out to Captain Ben, the bus driver, who got us there safely. So
he did get us there safely. That was very true.
Yes. He did also get the bus stuck in the Bojangles drive-thru, but otherwise safe.
I do remember that.
Only briefly, though.
It was incredibly brief.
I do credit that trip with the reason why I specifically seek out going to Bojangles before every trip I take from Hartsfield-Jackson Atlanta International Airport, because the Bojangles at T6 is really the only place close to me where I can get it. So thank you, Ethan, for that contribution to my every time I fly.
Of culture you are, Jake.
It's the yin and the yang of, we went to Portillo's, we went to Bojangles. You know, it perfectly balanced.
You got Chicago and the Carolinas somehow in Tampa, Florida.
Anyway, I think one of the things that we wanted to do at that point was to cover these games in as much detail as we could and try to provide different opinions, like a multifaceted view of them, right? We had guys that knew scheme. We had Ethan knew a lot about scheme. Cade knew a lot about recruiting. I was always the straight man, and Jake was always the traditions guy. So we were able. I'm serious. I see all of you laughing, but I am being 100% serious, because this was before the analytics revolution of my life. So I didn't have a specific bit yet, but I think we all brought something specific to the table when we were working through the analysis. And I think as we kept working on our craft, for a manner of speaking, we kept that same level of dedication, that same level of interest, that same level of, I guess, a digging deeper for other sports. Right. I think the level that we go to those talking about results, I mean, we did it in the last segment too, right? We talked about the in-depth pieces of how the Georgia Tech volleyball's roster works. And I think that's something that we've kept up over the years and gotten better at.
Well, my dirty secret is I became the non-rev guy because they kind of made me, but I really didn't know much about college tennis or college volleyball. Well, I knew I liked going to those events until I actually had somebody, Ethan, to like tell me how they were, specifically the tennis bit, like, or at least just to bounce my half-formed, slightly uninformed takes off of. And like, I don't know. It's hard to get out there, especially at the time. I feel like content, especially about college volleyball and well, I knew softball, but you know, those are two sports that we've really seen a kind of an explosion of good resources to dig into. But at the time, you know, you kind of got to take what you can get. You got to leverage the specific skills of the people you're around. I owe a lot of that, especially the tennis bit, to just being around smart people that know more than me and just knowing when to shut up, which sometimes I'm bad at. So
we did lay him off, you know, you don't have to give him a compliment. So we did make the decision to lay him off.
I was fired, hopefully not for my tennis knowledge or lack thereof, but we did have some good times at Ken Byers cheering on the Yellow Jackets indeed.
I think that's kind of something that when I put the notes in the outline of the generally somewhat self-indulgent history of this podcast, we've recorded from some odd spots and at some odd times of day. I distinctly remember the MRDC at like 9 p.m. in some random classroom.
That was our problem. Like that was a consistent problem the first year or so that we did this, is that we would do a rec club meeting at like 7 o'clock on a Monday. And then we thought, oh, we're all in the same place already. Why don't we just go get a meeting room in the Kolk and just knock out this episode. But by that point, it's 9 o'clock. All of us are tired. Our opinions aren't necessarily as fully formed. And I think early on, it definitely, once we kind of worked around it later on, but early on, that was definitely like a challenge for us, right? Trying to make sure that we were on target at 10 p.m. as we wore on the talking about, I don't know, like.
Which of the four of you was best at recording late at night? Because I've noticed when I record best, and I could, the night episodes, if it's past 9 o'clock, I'm done. Were any of you good at that?
I don't think there was ever a time of day when I was good. So that's very hard to answer. My supposed recruiting expertise that I definitely didn't know I had, which included facts such as recruits are rated from 1 to 5 stars and also are in high school, was on no matter what time of day.
I think that
it's a well-rounded performance, Kate.
Generally, some of the more fun moments I can remember having came late at night, but it certainly wasn't because we were making good content. It was more that the content was stupid.
I think
At
a certain point, we just got into just posting. Like late night, just really ripping some takes. Mm-hmm. And to be fair, they were still in depth to a certain level, but at the end of the day, they were some takes for sure.
I think in hindsight, recording every week has made me better at like having coherent thoughts. But that's probably how it happens to, you know, if you're refining a skill, then you're just going to be better at it. I don't know. I watch the same amount of sports, honestly, maybe a little bit less, or probably a decent amount less, because it's just hard when you're an adult, you got a job and you got things to do and things like that. But in terms of like knowing how to talk about it, I think that's at least self-reflecting the biggest difference for me.
Like, I think what we learned from that is just like, and from the football experience too, like you were talking about earlier, Jake, like the grass could be greener on the other side, or also it could all be dead. And you don't really know what you're going to get until you get over that horizon and actually make that decision. Right. And I think in learning more about, the college sports industry, I think all four of us, have gotten, as we've gotten older, despite all of us being still in our 20s, but as we've gotten older, as we've gotten probably a little bit more cynical about the current state of college athletics, and as we've seen more and more money and resources and et cetera, and conference realignment, our perspectives have evolved, and also our perspectives with regards to where Georgia Tech sits in that ecosystem has evolved, right? I think, Jake, the story that you tell about how you got into Georgia Tech or were aware of Georgia Tech in the first place is seeing Georgia Tech in the Miracle on Techwood, right? And being like, yeah, I'll apply here. Yeah, why not? But it's not like you were looking at the top 25 for a specific major or something and being like, or for the football program or the basketball program being like, why not?
Well, I mean, that's the reason Tech was on my radar. They were great at mechanical engineering, which is what I wanted to do. And, you know, we don't have to get into my personal life that much, but I get the point you're trying to make.
Yeah, but I think as we've gotten more into the world of Georgia Tech athletics and learning more about its books and its resources and its investment and all that sort of stuff, we've just kind of developed a different perspective that I think hopefully is not entirely cynical on some of the future facing stuff, especially when it comes to sports business. But I think it's a little bit more holistic. Right. It's a little bit more than here's what happened. It's here's what happened. Here's how that affects this. And here's how we can project that out into the future a couple years with everything else that's going on.
I think that's fair. There's plenty of places to get, or not plenty, but a number of places where you can just get results and recruiting rankings and stuff. I don't know. I feel like we've got a perspective on it that comes from a long time reading a lot of very esoteric stuff.
Reading and writing a lot of esoteric stuff. Don't forget the writing bit. This is eventually connected to a blog somewhere along the line.
Yeah, thanks for hiring me, Cade. I appreciate that.
But that is a factor here. Cade technically hired all of us but Jack, I think.
Well, yeah. That's a sliding doors moment. Because, like, you know, if I don't get hired, then I don't yell at Akshay to apply, and then we don't find Jack in the press box.
I yelled at you to apply.
Yeah, but you weren't here yet. There you go. It's a flat circle.
Yes, there you go.
It's flat. It's a cycle. But yeah, it's definitely.
Who I have to yell at? Just tell me who to yell at, and we'll restart the whole thing again.
that'll really get us going. But I think then, somewhere along this windy timeline, we get to adding, Ethan and Kate have to bow out just because they have their own educations to consider, and, you know, budget cuts and all that stuff and the economy, you know. I think along the way, as Jake and I continue along with the show, and then we have to take some time off, take a couple of hiatuses, think about how we want to design this moving forward. We brought along Jack at one point after Jake bullied Jack into writing for us, which you'll find that
there was no bullying involved. There was no bullying involved.
I was just kind of hoping you'd apply. I was like, shoot, we need this guy.
It was very good timing. That's... because I was at the end of my technique run and I didn't exactly know where the hell to take my work after that. And I was faintly aware that FTRS existed. And then once I realized what the hell was going on, I was like, wait a second, this makes perfect sense for me. So it was true serendipity that it worked out the way it did.
Yeah, and I think one of the things that Jack is really motivated to do is do this every week, right? I think Jack is really, really kept us on task and organized in that regard. And Jack has also added another dimension with the actual boots on the ground media coverage, right? Jack's always on press row. Jack is attending these interviews that we may necessarily not have time to do, but he's getting, you know, first party sources for a lot of this information. And I think
the content you provide from live tweeting is a little bit different than like me scrambling to tweet something in the stands of a game when I did that. So I appreciate
or when it. I did that, when I just decided that I was going to be snarky every time, which
there you go.
To be fair, it worked out for an entire 73-7 Georgia Tech football loss. So,
oh my God. It helps to have a full keyboard at a game that I can press buttons with and not a cell phone. It's very helpful.
That is true.
I for one hope that you never have to live tweet 73-7 anything ever again. So
I would want to live tweet our own 73-7 win. What do you mean?
You would not. Well, win maybe, but
yeah,
loss,
the win, I would take the win.
Having done the loss, let me tell you, at a certain point, I got tweets from other ACC blogs asking if they could send me alcoholic beverages to cope. And
wait, so if we lose, I get free booze. If we win, we just get a lot of traction. This seems like a win-win situation here. You have not.
It was a time. But I think with that kind of brings us to present day and episode 200. I'm sure, like I mentioned, I think at the start of this, there have been numbers are not our strong suit occasionally. There are definitely episode numbers that we've missed. Or things that have gotten lost along the way just because we took a couple of hiatuses here and there and stopped and started. But this is, for all intents and purposes,
this is canon.
This is canonically episode 200. And I think it's fair for us to also thank the listenership, right? We have a pretty steady listener base that's only been increasing, and it's because of y'all that we continue to do this, and we continue to cover the wide world of Georgia Tech athletics in the way that we do. So I think that's also something that we need to mention here as well as we round out our long-winded history of this podcast.
And I do want to chime in, and it is thanks to listeners that we have evolved our show over the years, focusing on certain things rather than others. So if you're out there, you know, as always, you know, message us, comment. I don't want to say like, subscribe, all that good YouTube stuff.
Hey, technically we are on YouTube.
The end. but you know, it's because of you guys that we shape the content that we do provide. And you know, some of those insights that we do have. So let us know what you want to see. And you know, this isn't a static program. It's something that's evolved over the years, and we'll continue to evolve with it. So
another 100 episodes, another 200 episodes, an evolution. Mm-hmm. Once again, indeed. Mr. Grant, Mr. Purdy, Mr. Lawson, and Mr. Kreger, how about we close out with the last round of news and notes from Georgia Tech sports this week. Let's start over with women's tennis. Women's and men's tennis, actually. The women are ranked 20th in the preseason poll, and they'll start the spring season in Ann Arbor for the Michigan Invitational. On the men's side, they will be hosting Brown. That'll be Sunday at noon. I don't think that's on TV, but I'm sure it'll be on YouTube, so you can catch it there.
I don't
Mr.
think
Grant.
Is any tennis on TV?
It's
ever?
On YouTube. Yeah.
Really?
Okay. It's usually on YouTube.
They don't have cameras at these things, so I never know.
They have cameras. They're just not TV cameras.
Yeah. I see. Okay.
They just strap a GoPro onto a railing in front of a court, call it, and stream it. Which, let's move on to talking about swimming. They are back in action at Queens University, which we found out was a D2 powerhouse last year that has moved up to D1 in the last couple of years. That'll be Saturday, like I said. Mr. Grant, you have a bunch of names, numbers, and points and decimals, everything here. What am I looking for if I find this on TV?
Yeah. So if you're finding this on TV, congrats. I don't know where it can be found. They haven't even posted a time, but they'll be up in Charlotte this weekend, up at Queens. Queens is pretty solid. I have recovered my Zoom window, so this is delightful. One thing I do want to shout out is a new feature of the cap, which tells us the share represented by each swimmer in terms of like a power score or a contributor score. Matej Dusa and Danielle Mullally being the man and the woman to watch. So, yeah, we're always working on analytical type stuff here, but Akshay is the king of that. I'm just the chief pretender to that there throne. So. In terms of taking us out, though, a new recurring bit on this podcast for those who have been listening is the historic results bit of the week that still needs a segment name. Similar, if you've listened to our bit with Stephen Little, we're going to look at Tech sports results in the quote-unquote Scions of the Southland era. That includes sports, football, baseball, softball, men's and women's basketball, men's and women's tennis, and volleyball. During the 2018-19 through 2022-2023 seasons, gents, I have a very, very simple question. What do you think Tech's overall results, win percentage during those five seasons are?
I'm gonna let y'all go first because I kind of know based off the section 103 results.
Give me... What, should we set a line and then go over or under? I think that might be a good way to do it.
No,
sure.
Just go. Okay.
Sure. Okay. I'll set the line at 450 win percentage. And I want.
It's over.
You're ruining the fun of this because I was going to have another person go over or under.
Well, I can't read your brain.
435. So.
35.
Okay. So let me set the line again. And then we'll go to Ethan to actually pick it. Let me set it at 515. And Ethan, do you think it's over or under?
I think it's higher than that. Our baseball and softball teams make up a lot of the games played, and they've generally been above 500. So I think it's higher than that.
Cade, over or under?
What's the fun in everyone agreeing? I'm going to say under.
Yeah.
We do it's need over. A contrarian element back.
It is over. In terms of Tech's overall win percentage, it's a 568 over the last five completed all sports seasons. Great intuition. Men's baseball is winning at a 602 clip. Softball is winning at a 538 clip. But neither of those are the number one. In fact, neither of those are the number one or number two. Do you guys know what those top two sports are?
Club golf. Swimming.
Yes.
No, I graduated. Come on. No. No, golf match play is not in this data set yet, but it is two sports that if you pay attention to non-rev, you would guess probably off the bat. It's Tech's two most consistent programs, I would say.
I feel like I know at least one of these. I should know.
Well, volleyball has to be one.
Volleyball. Nah. My other guess was women's tennis.
Golf or women's tennis?
Women's tennis, yeah.
There you go.
And rounding it out, men's tennis is just a hair above 500 at a 509. Men's basketball and football are both under 500. Women's basketball is a 590. Two, one more question for you. Do you know who Tech has the most wins against as a school, all sports combined in that time period?
Queens.
NC State.
NC State's a good guess. They are currently 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7th in that spin.
Maybe Duke?
They're 9th. They're 9th.
Duke softball single-handedly can turn that into a no. I'm gonna
and
go
men's with basketball.
Men's basketball. Yes. I'm gonna go with Boston College.
Boston College is number three. We don't play them in every sport every year, but we do usually throttle them when we do. I'm going to say, think about the team that Tech in conference is guaranteed to play every year in every sport, usually twice.
Clemson?
Yes, it is Clemson by a decent amount. Virginia Tech is at number two, Boston College at three.
Yeah. Interesting.
The top non-con is Kennesaw State at five, with Georgia State at six. Everyone but those teams are ACC programs. I also have results by coach and by site, but I don't want to get us too far in the weeds. As always, what is that win percentage against Clemson? We don't have to talk about that, but we do have a lot of pure wins, so good for us there.
Put it on the board. Hang the banner.
Most dubs. Don't ask me about most losses. I got that too, and it's not as fun.
Raw totals only. I've never seen a percentage in my life.
We don't know what those are.
Percentages are for nerds. Anyway, thank you, gentlemen, for reminiscing with us. Thank you, listeners, for listening to us ramble for 2 hours in our 200th episode. Mr. Grant, take us out for the 200th time, please.
As always, you can find us at FromTheRumbleSeat.com. We post articles up there in addition to these fine podcasts as well. You can feel free to email us FromTheRumbleSeat@gmail.com. We do appreciate your suggestions. And as I said earlier, it does shape how we direct this fine podcast. Keep an eye out in the meantime for baseball, softball, and tennis talk coming up as we look to preview the spring seasons. You can find us on Twitter at FTRSBlog. I'm at JakeGrant98. Jack is at Jack Nicholas. You can find Section 103 there as well. At Section 103 and Section103.com. Use code FTRS for 10% off. Tell them we sent you. You can find us on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube at From the Rumble Seat. And you can find this podcast wherever fine podcasts are otherwise distributed. Good night, good luck, and go Jackets.